On the first Sunday of Lent, the book of Deuteronomy introduces us to the problem about migration, ill-treatment, and oppression. As the descendants of Abraham went to Egypt as refugees and asylum seekers centuries before Christ, so are many African people coming now to the UK seeking for refuge. As the Israelites were ill-treated once they were settled in Egypt, so are many foreigners mistreated today once settled in our country. Although there are considerable political, historical, and cultural differences between the Israelites' migration to Egypt centuries ago and the current population mobility across countries and continents, there are still strong similarities concerning fear, justice, and dignity, as Anna Rowlands, a professor of Catholic social teaching at King's College, has wisely pointed out. We still fear the other, especially the one who is different from us. And we also fear losing our social order or sacrificing our comfortable lifestyle by admitting migrants in our country. As in ancient times, there is still a sense of injustice when somebody who desperately migrates from home so as to survive is abused or treated as an inferior being by their hosts. And, as happened with the Israelites and with many others throughout history, immigrants have always triggered the question about the equality of human dignity and about how to respect it and protect it. For instance, in the 16th century, Bartolomé de las Casas, a Spanish Dominican missionary, fought against power structures in order to defend the dignity of Indians, especially those who were taken as slaves by the conquistadores. His arguments on human dignity are remarkably similar to those voiced out today by Monsignor Raúl Vera López, a Mexican bishop expert in Catholic social teaching, who works hand in hand with exploited Mexican migrants who travel across the US and Mexican border. The reason why the Mexican bishop's language resonates with Bartolomé de las Casas' approach is that arguments used by the conquistadores to justify migrants' exploitation in the 16th century are also used today by the governments of rich countries. Indians were, and migrants are, treated in with disrespect because their oppressors consider them as inferior beings or second-rate citizens, as happened with the Israelites when they arrived in Egypt. Believing in a God who has created us all in his likeness means to confront the assumptions that some are more equal than others. Moreover, Catholic social teaching argues that foreign workers, despite any difficulties concerning integration, make a significant contribution to the economic development of the host country through their labor. Therefore, either through Christian anthropology or through a realistic economic analysis, we can deduce that these migrant laborers do not deserve to be slighted, thrust aside, or beset in the name of national financial security. Nevertheless, one might believe that these issues are too big to consider them as part of our examination of conscience, as part of our spiritual activity for Lent. What on earth can I do about the huge problem of migration and refugees? Even the Pope has admitted that this is a striking phenomenon because of the sheer numbers of people involved, the social, economic, political, cultural, and religious problems it raises, and the dramatic challenges it poses to nations and the international community. Moreover, one might be unsure about what position to take. On the one hand, it sounds reasonable that rich countries such as the UK want to restrict the influx of immigrants from poor countries. A nation has its political and economic limits. There is clearly no room for everyone. On the other hand, however, treatment of foreign persons who do not have a legal visa are quite often at odds with our belief in human dignity as the cornerstone of any socio-political organization. We know that hospitality has always been a serious call for the people of God. But I cannot sort out this problem on my own, can I? In short, what has this problem on migration to do with my confession for Lent or with my preparation for Easter? Following what we have said in our previous podcast regarding sin, which is personal but also social, we can tackle this issue by firstly reflecting upon our personal behavior and individual conscience. Do I fear people who are different from me, whether because of their nationality, color, religion, gender, or ideas? Does that fear affect the way I relate to those people? Have I tried to make contact or build bridges, at least with one person who is actually or symbolically an immigrant or who is totally different from myself? Was I able to hear or read a story of any of these suffering travelers? Hearing their stories is particularly interesting and enriching because it widens our horizon of understanding about the causes of current massive migration. Many people do not choose to fly away from their country and culture. Some are obliged by force and persecution, others by severe economic conditions. Whatever their reasons are, their stories open our eyes to an often unknown reality. Some socio-political analysts who have been keen to listen to their stories have subsequently studied in depth the situation. The famous American political philosopher Thomas Pogge, for example, compellingly argues that poverty in underdeveloped countries is not necessarily or exclusively caused by their lazy or inefficient population. On the contrary, it is caused by their elites who, in association with developed countries, assist in perpetuating an international status quo which promotes wealth for some and foments poverty for others. As citizens of the developed world, we ought therefore to discern whether our decisions favor or hinder other countries' situation. For example, when we buy flowers from Ethiopia, or coffee from Ecuador, or a t-shirt from China, it is worth thinking twice if we are contributing to social justice or to global injustice. A second state to link migration with our spirituality for Lent would be to reflect upon our direct social behavior. Do I treat immigrant people in town? How do I treat immigrant people in town, in the bus, on the train, at church, at work? What kind of comments do I make in a meeting when this issue is raised, either seriously or as a joke? As a consumer, am I aware of the link between my shopping and migration? Do I buy what I think is best according to my conscience, or do I only use the profit maximization parameter? But even if I personally decided to convert my attitude towards immigrants, or to be more aware of and responsible for the whole issue of migration, it would not make a massive difference. As Pope Benedict has explained in an encyclical called Caritas in Veritate, there is a social phenomenon of epoch-making proportions that requires bold, forward-looking policies of international cooperation if it is to be handled effectively. This socio-political engagement is the third and last stage of our reflection. As we said in our previous podcast, structural sins can only be tackled structurally, for which we need to strengthen our existential relational dimension. Yet, we do not need to be politicians for that. For example, an organization called UK Citizens have done fantastic and effective campaigns through ordinary people so as to get a better treatment for refugees and asylum seekers. Although the organization was founded by a Catholic person and is quite embedded in principles of Catholic social teaching, it is actually non-religious and open to everybody. A direct or indirect support for this kind of organization, such as UK Citizens or Progressio or CAFOD, seems to be a more comprehensive Christian response to the problem of migration than a mere individualistic one. In the end, we are called to exercise the virtue of hospitality and transform our land and planet, as far as possible, into the land where milk and honey flow for all. Being tempted by extreme nationalist idolatries will not do justice to our relational dimension, nor to our preparation for Easter. Happy Lent and God bless.